was a meltdown that happened somewhere. Poison the earth, water and air. But it isn't news with the TV or press, 'cause that was the week of Lady Gaga's new dress. Antiquities being destroyed in Iraq. Children are starving from U.S. attack. But we never gave it one minute thought, 'cause that was the week.
From Colorado and today Baton Rouge, Louisiana and Northern Virginia, welcome back to the Tim Danahy Show here at Danahy.com, and we're a proud member of the Coffee Party USA Network. And today we've got a couple of issues to deal with, like trade policies and U.S. businesses not investing in themselves and currency manipulation and China and steel. And it should be fun, as we're going to talk with Richard McCormick of ManufacturingNews.com. And he's a good guy who's been on the show before. You're going to like him. And we'll get to him in just a few minutes. But first, let's talk about some things in the news. Do you remember, it was just a few weeks ago, actually you may still see it, but those Facebook pictures with that tinted overlay, that rainbow tint overlay that was used to celebrate the Supreme Court's decision to allow gay marriage. ConservativePost.com reports, and ordinarily I would not cite something, but there is a grain of truth in this. They're reporting, and they quoted some an MIT professor and another professor that said that those rainbow tints over your Facebook profile picture, turns out it was Facebook's way of performing psychological testing on its users. And it's they're getting a lot of grief on this, conservativepost.com, and they are under all kinds of attack, people saying it's crazy and paranoia and so forth. But conservativepost.com said they wanted to see, Facebook wanted to see how they could influence their users, and it was a form of psychological testing on its users. And Facebook, of course, denies this. Now, you can say conspiracy theory and the denial would seem plausible, but I want to ask listeners to try and remember back on this show back in March, and we had a gentleman on by the name of Robert Scheer, and he was talking about his book, They Know Everything About You. And Facebook admits it's working with the Department of Defense on something called the Minerva Project. And the project is researching how social media can be used to influence public opinion and to quell public dissent. You can look it up. It's the Minerva Project. Probably if you did a search of Minerva Project, Facebook, and Department of Defense, you could see it. And this project, the Minerva Project, is fully funded by the Defense Department through 2017. So even though ConservativePost.com has come under a lot of criticism for reporting this story, and even though Facebook has denied the story, the denial rings hollow based on the Minerva Project. And so I'll be curious to see if anything happens. Probably nothing will, but we can't be too quick to dismiss some stories, especially when we put it in the context of the larger story. So anyway, it was an interesting issue that arose. Moving on, as a follow-up on our show yesterday about why would businesses invest in China, Wall Street on Parade, which is a great source of financial news, wallstreetonparade.com, I encourage you to bookmark them or tag them or whatever you do with it. They're reporting more information about the Chinese stock market that I discuss, but they're offering some additional information on their story today in WallStreetOnParade.com. Now, In yesterday's show, I mentioned the how the Chinese economy is built on a house of cards and real estate cards. There's loans against them. There's shell corporations. There's incentive for government to use the shell corporations to get loans so they inflate the value of land. And it's estimated to be trillions of dollars. And a lot of times people now, because they have inflated values for their real estate, they're getting loans against their real estate, and they are investing in the stock market. And we talked about how the stock market is having some severe problems. I think it's lost 25% of its value in recent weeks. But Wall Street on Parade reports, and I'll just read it, even though I know you hate it when I read things. Sometimes it just makes life better and more accurate. But WallStreetOnParade.com reports, against that backdrop, Bloomberg is reporting this morning that 26% of the stocks trading on mainland China's stock exchanges have been suspended from trading. A trading halt suggests a temporary measure. A trading suspension suggests a much longer time frame. Bloomberg goes on to report that the suspensions have locked up $1.4 trillion of shares. WallStreetOnParade.com continues. The immediate question that comes to mind is, to qualify as a stock market, there has to be a two-sided market. If an investor can't exit 26% of the stocks that are listed on the exchanges, if an investor in the marketplace have no idea how the stock is really priced, is it really still a stock market? The Brady Commission, which investigated the 1987 U.S. stock market collapse, used the word dysfunctional to describe the day of trading in 1987. But it's much worse in China. So WallStreetOnParade.com goes on to say, adding to the mood of desperation on the part of Chinese authorities, the Financial Times is reporting that journalists in China have been told they are no longer allowed to report on suicides by equity citizens. And that's the phrase used in China to describe their stock investors. So putting it in an American context, what's happening here is, suppose that you own some stocks. And in China, 80% of the stocks are owned by individuals. In America, it's much less. But suppose you own some stocks and you couldn't sell them, because if it were to be allowed to be traded, the price would fall so far, so fast, that it would increase the panic. So the Chinese authorities have said, well, we're not going to let you trade 26% of the stocks. And so, and it's worth $1.4 trillion. So you add that to a number of other issues that are going on in China, and they are in a desperate race to try and stay solvent. I encourage you to listen to yesterday's show to learn more. But again, I ask the question, why would a business sell our national manufacturing potential, I guess would be the right term, why would they sell our national potential and invest in China just for cheap labor? Because I know these businesses are saying, well, if we go to China and we invest our money there and give them our technology and sell it back to America for less, well, then they'll open up their markets for us. Well, the truth is, China will not have a vibrant consumer market for American businesses to capitalize upon. So WallStreetOnParade.com, thank you for adding that additional information and offering that additional story. You do a great job. WallStreetOnParade.com. Also, let's move on. The trade deficit got bigger in May, and that means we're importing more than we export. And this is what happens because the dollar is strong. Everybody worries about the falling dollar. The dollar is strong, and foreign economies are getting weak. So what America does export, we just, they can't afford it. anymore. And so I would, you know, I know they say it's manufacturing, and I know there is a manufacturing component in there, but primarily it would be food and resources. But the trade gap increased over $1 billion more. It's up to about $42 billion for the month of May. And that's like writing a check to a foreign country. It's just $42 billion that the gap is what we could be producing here. And you do that every month after month after month, and you can see that we are selling our productive capacity and giving our jobs overseas. But anyway, the report went on to say in May the drop in imports came. This is a Reuters report. And it says in May the drop in imports came as purchases from China rose 9.5%. And that can fan further criticism from U.S. manufacturers that Chinese firms are using a cheap currency and unfair subsidies to gain market share in America. It's a horrible situation. We're going to talk about that too whenever we come back from our break. I tell you what, why don't we take the break now, and then when we come back, we're going to have Richard McCormick of Manufacturing and Technology News, manufacturingnews.com. You're going to like this guy. We've got a few things to talk about. We're going to be talking about the steel industry. We're going to be talking about currency manipulation, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and why aren't U.S. companies investing in capital equipment? Why aren't they investing in themselves? Kind of an interesting story, and I'm curious to hear what the answers might be. Okay, well, you're listening to The Tim Danahy Show, and we'll be right back.
Bush and Obama caught up in lying. State Department war is inciting, but that was the week survivors were fighting.
You preserve a nation one community at a time, with shared knowledge and an informed electorate, with many voices speaking with civility and integrity. And we will preserve our nation when we participate, we learn, we discuss, we vote. We are the Coffee Party USA. Join us today. CoffeePartyUSA.com.
Bradley Manning is sitting in jail. Patriot Act is reading your mail. Aaron Schwartz is suicidal, but everyone's watching American Idol.
You hear the music we're playing here on The Tim Danahy Show. We like to feature socially aware music by independent artists across the country. So if you have music or you know a musician who would like us to feature their songs, contact us through Danahy.com. Send us an MP3 version or a link, a little bit about you and permission to use it on the show. And we'll listen. We'll try to feature it and we'll post your link for everyone to see. Music is a part of the Tim Danahy Show community. We'd love for you to be that part here at Danahy.com.
Families died, drones in the skies commit genocide. Oh, that was the week they could have been saved, but there wasn't room for them on the front page. Oh, that was the week.
Welcome back to the Tim Danahy Show here at Danahy.com. And there's a few sources of news and analysis out there that are really kind of like hidden gems that give some real insights and ideas, and I trust them as opposed to some of the major media outlets and publications. And already on the show, I've mentioned Wall Street on Parade, and really they're incredible with their financial reporting. But a couple months ago, the good people over at the United Steelworkers told me about this guy and his publication that's worth checking for American Industrial and Trade News. And so I did check it out. And that's how I found out about Richard McCormick and his Manufacturing and Technology News. And you can find it at manufacturingnews.com. And it's a terrific publication that brings together the real stories behind American productivity, the same way Wall Street on Parade covers banking and finance. And it's my good luck that Richard McCormick is willing to come on the show and give us a peek at some of the stories he's researching and reporting. And Richard, welcome back to the Tim Danahy Show.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Well, it's wonderful to have you. I mean, you can tell I must be some sort of manufacturing and trade and productivity geek. You know, I love this stuff. I really do. And so you have your new July 6th issue out, and people can subscribe to it. And I encourage them to do so. And you have a number of stories in here. And what I'm hoping, Richard, with your permission, is that we can feature some of these stories and then kind of give people a flavor of what's going on and then encourage them to take a look for themselves. How does that sound?
Sure. Sounds great.
Okay. Well, the first story that jumped out at me, and I'm certainly not going in sequence here, is you have a story with the title, U.S. Steel Industry Fights to Protect Itself from Import Surge. I know that China is like making steel like crazy, but can you give me kind of the story and the background on this?
Yes. Well, so the United States is not a very large producer of steel anymore. It used to be like one of the top 2, 3, 4, 5. Now it's really not at all. I mean, China has so much production capacity that they've installed. China produced 695 million tons of steel in 2014. So 695 million tons. The United States produced 94 million tons. So, you know, do you do the math? We're much smaller than China. They have almost all their steel is produced by state-owned enterprises. Ours are produced, all of our steel is produced by private companies. There's not a big enough market in China for all that steel. I mean, you know, there's just not. And it's all subsidized, and it's all been built by basically, you know, state-owned enterprises. And it's looking for market. And guess where the market is? The Europeans block their steel. They don't want their steel. They're smart. Most South America does the same. They put up barriers, trade barriers, and have high tariffs and the like. And the only place that doesn't is the United States. So all this cheap steel, subsidized steel, is being dumped in the United States. And it's destroying so many companies. There's more steel being dumped into the United States, more imports than ever before. We're reaching record high level of imports. And, you know, everyone says, oh, we have a renaissance, and we have cheap natural gas, and we're set. But when you look at the numbers, it's just it's absolutely striking. And so the steel industry is trying to protect itself. It's trying to fight back. It's trying to just stay in business. It's trying not to have to go through a wretching downturn. And, you know, it's just trying its best to at least produce here and sell here. But it's just getting harder by the day. And the United States government has been reticent. They've not really stepped in. So the steel industry has asked that they do so. They filed an expensive case, and so they're starting the process of trying at least in one steel category. They've done this so many now, dozens of times. It's the only option they have is to file a case with the U.S. government, make a case to the U.S. government, present the evidence, defend themselves, hire expensive lawyers, say that they're being materially injured, they're laying off workers, they're not profitable, they can't put money into production or new capabilities, new innovation. And the U.S. government is, you know, kind of sitting there on the sidelines and not really defending our industry per se. I mean, they're the arbiter, and they're not the protagonist here. So the industry has to try to defend itself since it doesn't have any help from our government. And so they filed a trade case, big one, with the federal government. And hopefully, you know, they're seeking relief. They're seeking tariffs. And that's the only relief that they can get. That's the only measure that they can pursue to try to, you know, quote, level the playing field.
Well, Richard, we look at this, and I know you and I are concerned about national security issues. If China were to continue this policy and all American steel mills were to close, one would think that would create a level of dependency and national security risk that would be We couldn't even fix our roads and bridges. We couldn't build a battleship. We couldn't build a light switch without Chinese steel. We couldn't build an electrical transmission tower. We couldn't build a steel cable.
Steel is in like tens and tens of thousands of products. I mean, paper clips. What are they made out of? Guardrails. You name it. Rebar is in every building. I mean, you can't build a bridge out of like plastic.
Yeah, and I do not understand how the government can just say, well, you know, I mean, does the government think they're smarter than the rest of the world and we can this is some sort of subsidy for America, you know, to get cheap steel while the rest of the world is saying, hey, we got to protect our industries?
This has just been going on for so long now. And it's not just steel. It's so many industries. It's electronics and it's semiconductors and it's glass and it's, you know, consumer electronics, consumer goods. It's everything. The government is just driven by this free market ideology that, the lowest price is the best price. And, you know, to hell with it, we're going to benefit because they're making steel and we won't have to spend as much on steel. And goodbye, good riddance. Those are dirty, ugly industries. Who needs steel? You get Bethlehem Steel sitting in Bethlehem, PA, and that's an eyesore. And it's like, close those places down. We don't need that industry. We need the industries of the future, innovation and R&D and, you know, vaporware industries. When you look at what's happened with the trade deficit and with pay for most Americans and lack of spending on infrastructure and infrastructure is falling apart, it's all kind of related to this idea of buying the cheapest anywhere made in the world and forgetting about our ability to make things.
Well, one of the things...
It's all interrelated. Our government's broke. Guess why?
Yeah.
But nobody seems to make... I'm telling you, it's the most frustrating thing in the world. Nobody seems to make that connection between our loss of industrial capability and our inability to invest in the infrastructure, have retirement security and Medicare and all the issues that are associated with having a modern industrial society. If you don't have industry, how do you have a modern industrial society? You don't have a modern industrial society if you don't have industry. You have a society. I don't even think it's modern. You have India or I don't know what. I don't know what you have.
If you look at the William Holden, Barbara Stanwyck movie, Executive Suite, there's this fantastic monologue at the end, and it talks about, you know, if we don't build something, we're just a nation of pencil pushers. And we're not going to live long as pencil pushers. And so,
Trump, man, you know, we turn into Greece,
yeah,
you know, exponential. We're an exponential, case, maybe more than exponential. I mean, you know, Greece is small potatoes, but we have, you know, $17 trillion of debt now and growing. Over the Obama years, it's grown by $7 trillion. So I don't know. Our government's just not focused on this. I don't know why. I can't tell you why. Maybe it's Americans aren't just activated and absolutely irate about it, and they're sitting still. We just had a trade debate, you know, a big, big trade debate over the Trade Promotion Authority and whether or not the president should be granted fast track. And it was not really much of a debate, I have to say. And then I start asking people who I know and aren't involved in any of the issues that I cover, and I ask them, did you pay attention to the trade debate that took place in Congress and with the president? And frankly, they say no. And, you know, they're just kind of tuned out. So, until Americans kind of get engaged, you know, the powers that be, this idea, ideology that the cheapest price anywhere from any producer, no matter where it's made or how it's made, it's good enough for us. We save money doing it that way.
Well,
it kind of prevails.
It is ridiculous. And the steel issue, I mean, it will, trust me, it will come back and bite us in a big time, because you just don't start up a steel mill. You say, oh, China has got some sort of leverage on us. You don't start up a steel mill in 14 days and say, okay, we're up and running. It shuts us down, and I just don't like the vulnerability involved with it.
It's well beyond steel too, and you know, and there are high tech steels, but every single person in the military has a cell phone. Every one of them. Every person in the military has a cell phone, and not one of those cell phones is made in the United States of America. There's not one of them.
Yeah.
You can say, are you vulnerable? Oh, well, no, we have the capability to make, nuclear missiles and destroyers and the like. But, you have to call your general every once in a while.
Yeah.
So even just when you start looking at just the electronic supply chain, it's like, wow, we don't have hardly anything left of the electronics industry. We still have a steel industry in the United States, but there's hardly anything left of an electronics industry. I mean, the printed circuit board industry has been completely decimated. And when you say decimated, there's a precise definition of decimated. 1 out of 10 survive, And that's about what's happened in the printed circuit board industry. You cannot have a high-tech industry if you do not have a printed circuit board industry. And basically, that industry is virtually gone from our shores. So it's well beyond steel, and it's into much, much higher-tech type of equipment.
Yeah, it's a frightening situation. Richard, earlier you mentioned currency manipulation, and you have another story in this current release of Manufacturing and Technology News, and it's entitled, I abbreviate a little bit, "After a Decade of Work, Currency Manipulation Effort Comes to an End Based on a Specious Argument." What's the story on that?
The domestic manufacturers have been really complaining about how China, Japan, the Asian Tigers basically have manipulated their currency to make their exports to the United States much cheaper and our exports from the United States to their countries much more expensive. It's given them a tremendous advantage. Japan has, intervened in its currency hundreds of times over the last 20 years. China has held its currency to be really low against the dollar, so it gives them a huge advantage. The debate has been going on for really since 2003. People have been talking about this and really actively engaged in trying to, get some action by the U.S. government to discourage other countries from taking, illegal advantage of the U.S. markets and U.S. producers by setting their currency. And there's been nothing really for 13 years except right the last month or so when TPA was debated. There was a little flurry of activity, and that's the first time really that there was like a real chance that currency would be debated and considered legislatively. It hadn't been, and so it happened. It happened in the Senate, and it got voted down in the Senate, 51-48. And the arguments that were made at the time were just absolutely, I've never heard such crazy arguments, but they said basically that the people and the companies pursuing the provision that would include currency in trade negotiations as a factor of foreigners subsidizing their industries, that provision would be, it's corporate welfare for the American companies, because it would give them an unfair advantage. Now, this is perplexing. I have never heard this argument, but it was made. And it's like, no. It's not our companies that get an advantage. Wait a minute. It's the foreign companies that get the advantage. So we've had senators on the floor of the Senate make these arguments, and it's just a head-scratcher. It's really unbelievable that after all these years of trying to educate members of Congress and their staff and the powers that be, the policymakers, lawmakers, how debilitating this is to U.S. industry, for it to come up in the Senate very quickly, very quietly, and then just get booted out. And now there's really no hope. That whole issue is dead. We're never going to deal with currency. I can't see us dealing with currency now again. It's over, and our industries are just going to have to try to figure out how to survive without our government defending them.
I remember I think it was the Department of Justice issued a report saying, yes, China did manipulate its currency, and they did this in 2012, this report. And Richard, you'll appreciate this. I read about it. It was December 26th. They issued it like on Christmas Eve, so nobody is going to read it or look at it or comment on it, and then the Christmas holidays go by, and by then it's just like old news, you know, verification, the Chinese manipulating currency, unfair competition. And I'm just stunned that we allow this. But, you know, Richard, you kind of bring up a point here, and you think, well, who could possibly be in favor of currency manipulation, allowing it to continue? Who could possibly be in favor of allowing manufacturing of all sorts to be overseas?
Oh, it's simple. That's simple. That's an easy, easy answer to that question.
go ahead and answer it then, because...
Retailers. Retailers benefit. They can buy cheaper stuff and mark it up higher and have a much higher level of profit.
Yeah.
The Wall Street Wall Street investors who invest in companies that make stuff overseas, who can do it much cheaper overseas and save pennies per product, or dimes or quarters or whatever, it become more profitable. Those companies all become more profitable. Who else benefits? There are a lot of import companies in the United States. Guess what? They're very active here in Washington. The retailers are extremely active. The retailers are huge. They completely. Walmart has so many more employees than GM now. GM the producers used to be really a forceful group in Washington. Now the producers have been just completely annihilated, and they don't have much of a voice except through the big multinational companies who benefit from this. And, I don't want to sound like a typical Bernie Sanders, but, it's true. It's just true. I mean, there are people who benefit from it. All the foreign corporations benefit. They have offices here. They're not stupid. All the foreign countries have, staff here. They benefit from it. The only ones who don't benefit from it are Americans. Even though they buy something cheaper at Walmart, and they save $15 on a pair of sandals or shoes or something.
It comes
they're not
back.
Making anything here. You can't have people buying stuff and they're not producing anything. They're not going to have income to do it. So there are a lot of people who benefit. There are lots of them.
Yeah, well, there is this issue, and you bring it up, and that is, for example, I think you're in Northern Virginia. If you go to Walmart and you buy something, only 18% of what you buy stays invested in the community. But if you buy from a local retailer in Northern Virginia, 45% of what you buy stays in the community. And if you use the velocity of money, how it turns over and turns over, you can see that 45%, that's going to come back to you, Richard, pretty quick,
yeah.
Too. But that works at a macro level, too. You buy American and you employ Americans, and that money circulates even better. I mean, I'm not a Luddite or anything. I'm not anti-technology, and I'm not a anti-trade person. But there's got to be some sort of interest considered besides a corporate short-term bottom line, because their focus on this short-term bottom line is going to kill this country, and it's going to kill their long-term bottom line. Would that be an accurate statement?
Oh, just drive around, please. Just try to drive in L.A. at rush hour, or San Francisco or Seattle or Washington, D.C. or New York. And I was up in New York. Holy macaroni, the infrastructure. Guess when the last update of the infrastructure was in all these cities? It was in the 1950s when we were an industrial powerhouse. Now, we can't even maintain what we built when we were an industrial powerhouse, much less try to increase the capacity of our infrastructure. And since 1950, our population has more than doubled. We have, I don't know how many more times cars we have on the road, but we haven't increased, any of the capacity of our infrastructure, much less maintain what we've got. So, without an industry, without somebody saying, hey, we need an industrial base in this country, we're going to struggle. This is going to be a big struggle. This is just the start of something. You've seen it already. We've seen it in Baltimore. There are no jobs in Baltimore. We've seen it in Detroit. We have cities that have just been completely destroyed by this lack of interest, I guess. Or an ideology. So, we just got to get our game back. We can do it quickly if we decide to. I mean, we're always just tremendously capable of doing it. Once we decide on something, this country will act. And, I think we're getting there. I think there's more awareness. But I'm telling you, it can come back quickly. It left quickly. It can come back even faster.
Well, I like
that. If we're determined.
Well,
if we want to do it, we can do it. No doubt.
And we just have to convince the corporations to do it. But I'll tell you what, Richard, when we come back, we've got to go to a commercial break. But when we come back, what I want to talk about is another story in manufacturing and technology news that you publish, and that are what are the reasons for the severe downturn in U.S. capital equipment investment, because that relates to investing in ourselves and building here. And it's an interesting subject. So we're talking with Richard McCormick, and he's the publisher of Manufacturing and Technology News. You can take a look at it at manufacturingnews.com, an outstanding publication about production and trade in the United States. I encourage you to take a look at it. And you're listening to him here on the Tim Danny Show. We'll be right back.
That was the week Fukushima radiation is reaching our shore. Afghanistan's looking like El Salvador. Plutonium is leaking in Paducah, Kentucky. While you scratch your card to see if you're lucky.
Teddy Roosevelt said, of all forms of tyranny, the least attractive and the most vulgar is the tyranny of mere wealth. This is why antitrust law and competition is essential to America's economic health. This is why the Organization for Competitive Markets works to reclaim competition for farmers, ranchers, and rural communities across America. We believe our duty is to advocate a just role for government in the agricultural economy, an enforcer of rules necessary for markets that are fair, honest, and accessible. The Organization for Competitive Markets. Learn more at competitivemarkets.com.
Mercury in your teeth, fluoride in your bones. Glyphosate in our food causes cancers, but that was the week of the stars and their dancers. Monsanto is changing.
Welcome to this episode of the Tim Danahy Show's American History Minutes. In 1995, when the U.S. Senate was considering the United States as part of the World Trade Organization, Ralph Nader challenged every member of Congress to read the entire treaty and answer 10 simple questions in public. Nader asked because he saw no evidence that any congressman even read what was in the bill that would represent the greatest surrender of local, state, and national sovereignty in United States history. Of all the members of Congress, only Senator Hank Brown of Colorado had the fortitude to accept Nader's challenge. He read the World Trade Agreement, sat down in front of an audience and cameras, and correctly answered 12 questions. His response to actually reading the treaty? He said he believed in free trade, but he was stunned how the World Trade Organization was a threat to national sovereignty. No other member of Congress showed evidence of reading the bill, and Senator Brown went to his fellow senators and tried to tell them the trade agreement was bad for America. However, no one changed their vote. The U.S. became part of the World Trade Organization, and all our legislation that affects business and consumers is subjugated to the final authority of the World Trade Organization. The world's greatest deliberative body didn't even read the bill that surrendered our ability to freely make future laws. This American History Minute is brought to you by The Tim Danahy Show. Please like us on Facebook at Tim Danahy Show, follow us on Twitter at hashtag Tim Danahy Show, and listen to us at Danahy.com.
Radically altering seeds with deceit. Roundup is coming out in your urine. My brothers in prison are torturing urine. Jill Stein and Sherry are shackled to chairs. Media is acting like they're unaware, while Obama and Romney from Wall Street debating, doing each other incestuous mating. But we didn't care, 'cause we didn't know. We only saw what they chose to show. We got our kicks, we're not complaining. It's only news if it's entertaining. Oh, that was the...
Welcome back to the Tim Danahy Show here at Danahy.com, and we're having a wonderful conversation on air and off air too. And I wish we could somehow take the off air comments and put them on there, but there's a certain sense of decorum that prohibits it from doing it. But Richard, trust me, you know, he's got his public face, and it's smart, it's wise, it's important, it's good. You need to follow manufacturing and technology news. But off air, you can really dig into the deep quality of the man and what his efforts are all about. Just an extraordinary individual, and we're proud to have him on the show. And we've been talking about imports and currency manipulation and how this continues to go on in Washington. And we kind of boil it down to saying, well, it's profitable for corporations, but it's a short-term profit, but long-term, it could be detrimental not only to the country and to all of us, but it will be detrimental to them too. And there's a statistic that Richard has covered, and he has put in Manufacturing and Technology News, and he wrote a story, and it's called "What Are the Reasons for the Severe Downturn in U.S. Capital Equipment Investment since 2008? And Richard, if you'd be so kind, first of all, go back and explain what capital investment is, and just so people understand, and then we can go from there.
It's investment in equipment, new equipment, intellectual property, patent, you know, fees, filings. It's all the investment that companies make to become more productive, more profitable, bigger, to grow, to invest in, you know, new automation, robotics equipment, and the like. So it's a measure of whether or not your economy is, you know, kind of looking a little longer term, making the investment in improvements, in quality improvements, productivity improvements, process improvements, sustainability improvements, you know, becoming more efficient in your use of energy and resources. And so that's, you know, it's kind of a bellwether measure of whether or not your economy is taking kind of a long-term view on, you know, its prospects and such. So that's, it's been measured for a long time.
Well, I look at this and you know, that used to be an indicator, you know, whenever you would evaluate a company, you'd say, well, are they reinvesting in themselves? And if they reinvested in themselves, well, then you would look at them and say, well, hey, they're probably a good investment. I think I will buy their stock. And it would be a buy and hold type of situation. But now with these, you know, again, we're talking conceptually, by not investing in themselves, they're essentially saving money and generating cash that they could use for stock buybacks or dividends or whatever, and short term really inflate the value of their stocks and the perception of their company. This, by not investing in capital equipment, they're really hurting themselves. Aren't they? They're losing their ability to compete over the long term, right?
I think so. I mean, you just described it better than like anybody else I've heard describe it. Here it is in a nutshell. Yes. So net investment in equipment was at $222 billion in 2006. That dropped from $220 billion in 2006 to $193 billion. 2013. So it's dropping, and it's dropped tremendously, actually. Total net private investment was $860 billion in 2006. In 2013, it went to $524 from $860 to $524. These are big drops, but, you know, in an economy that's, quote, growing, for us not to be investing in equipment and innovation and, you know, productivity improvements and training and worker development, those sorts of things, that means you're not seeing productivity growth. And in fact, we haven't seen much productivity growth. And usually when you have productivity growth, you have, you know, more riches being created. And so productivity growth has been dropping. It's down to well below 1% now. And the investment in intellectual property, which is, you know, really one of the most important measures, has also dropped over the last 9 or 10 years. From in 2006, it was $74 billion. Now it's $71 billion. So even though the fact that we have this country that's kind of, you know, focused on innovation, the amount that's actually being invested in equipment, you know, and capital investment, these types of ideas is actually going down, not up. So, I mean, most people think, yeah, it's going guns, great guns. But in fact, it's not. And even FDI, Foreign Direct Investment, there used to be a lot of investment made by U.S. companies and then also by foreign companies in the United States. But even that's gone down. Foreign direct investment in the United States was $314 billion, and that was 13 years ago, $314 billion. Now it's $147 billion. So we're not getting a lot of investment in the United States. It's dropped by well more than half. Those are big drops. That means, you know, foreign companies are not investing in this country. They're putting their money someplace else. And that does not bode well for Mark and, you know, a growing population. Our population is growing. We're the third largest country in the world. We have 320 million Americans, and our population's growing. We'll be up to 400 million in 40 years. So we'll go from 320 to 400 million. We need the investment here to create jobs, to have people, you know, operate that equipment, maintain it, produce it, sell it, and keep the infrastructure of, you know, of our manufacturing infrastructure up to date with the latest technologies and the ability to produce new products that we need so desperately to address, you know, issues such as global warming and sustainability. We need a whole new industrial enterprise, really, to kind of break out of this, you know, industrial era into a new era. And you need automation technologies and the best. You need the best, the smartest, the best. And we're not investing. So that's serious. It's a serious thing. Nobody talks about it. It's quiet. It's one of those, backwater issues that's really very important and does not get attention. That, you know, quarterly profit statements do and the dividends do and, you know, GDP growth, those sorts of things get a lot of attention. But certainly not this. And this is, you know, this is the undercarriage of an economy that needs to be addressed or at least considered when, you know, you're trying to create policies for how to stimulate investment in new technology, new equipment, new jobs, new productivity, enhancing technologies and techniques.
Well, I look at this, you know, and public austerity as a matter of public policy is proven not to work, you know, as evidence around the world. But there's a private austerity going on, too, that is certainly a private death spiral. And whenever you take a look at perhaps a community economic development, and I'll use Kansas as an example, Sam Brownback's new Kansas, where they think that by cutting taxes, it will attract industry. Well, it hasn't. And I will tie this, Richard, over into what you just said, but you got to bear with me for another 20 seconds or so. Why would a business invest in a place that doesn't even invest in itself? Now, let me make that transition then. Why should an investor invest in a business that doesn't even invest in itself? So whenever you look at the decline of capital investment that businesses are making in themselves, an investor or any outside observer should look at it and say, how can you possibly sustain yourself if you don't even believe in yourself enough to invest? Would you agree with that twisted and long evaluation I've made?
Yes, I would. I think so much of our tax dollars aren't going into productive economic development types of projects. So much of our tax dollars have been diverted to war, and so much go to, paying the expenses of healthcare expenses, the military and Medicare and, these entitlement programs that just are set by COLAs. So we are paying huge, and we have a huge tax burden in this country. We pay tremendous level of taxes. So I can fully understand. I'm a business person. I can fully understand how there's this sense that we're overly taxed, because I am personally.
But
you just have to be really smart in how you set your priorities, because we do tax ourselves adequately. We just don't make it a priority to invest in, you know, local infrastructure or economic development or ways to make it more attractive or appealing for industry, for companies to locate in the United States. And these companies are global. They are. They can do easily with their relational databases. They have SAP systems, and they've hired Oracle to run their numbers. They can really easily determine what it is in terms of profitability to make any product anywhere in the world. And when they compare those numbers to what it takes to produce in the United States, they're still not attractive enough to do it here. So we have to look at all those costs, every single cost, and try to determine, you know, how do we become more competitive? And every other country in the world does that. I can assure you, they are so conscious of it. They're incredibly alert. Our country isn't.
I want to agree with you, and I want to disagree with you, Richard. Okay, and that is, you and I, as small businessmen, we are overtaxed. I had Jonathan Clements of the Wall Street Journal. He comes on once a month. I had him on a week or two ago, and he says the entrepreneur in the United States is the highest taxed entity in the United States, if you take all of our taxes. But you take all of the OECD nations, you take all the biggest ones, and the United States, even though we have a high effective, statutory tax rate, I think the second highest behind perhaps Japan, our effective tax rate is the second lowest, I think, behind Iceland or something. The big businesses are getting all the breaks. And if you can capitalize on capital gains and dividend income and stuff like that, your tax rate is actually quite low. But if you're a working stiff like you and me, or a guy working on the steel mill or whatever, we're paying the highest taxes of all, and that is a burden.
I agree with you there. I definitely agree with you on all those points. I guess the point is, yes, if you do invest, make the investment so that it's an attractive place for a company to operate and hire people and have a good quality life, a high quality life, then you're going to attract industry and you're going to attract companies and you're going to attract the right type of people into your community, and it'll grow. You create a growth, you know, industry, and an appealing place for younger people to work. And, we've all seen that. I go to Brooklyn. My daughter lives in Brooklyn. It's like, wow, something's happening here. And it's just true. If you don't make that investment, though, you're just going to be in that death spiral that you mentioned. We have to be really smart, and we have to realize we've been an island nation. We're separated by the rest of the world by the two biggest oceans on the globe. We're just we don't speak a lot of different languages here. We speak English basically, and require everyone to do so. But we have to become really more globally alert and aware. And again, I go back to the fact that the industries left. They did. They could do those spreadsheets. They could see easily where it was most profitable, where taxes were the lowest, where regulations didn't cost them, and they moved. And, now it's our turn to kind of like, okay, let's do the real nitty-gritty analysis to determine how we become more competitive so we can hire people in this country and take advantage of all of our strengths and our resources and our capabilities and our people, the people that we have in this country, which are second to none. We all know that because the whole world has moved here. We got the world here. They've all moved here. Imagine, you're trying to sell to any place in the world and you can just tap into the body of people from those regions who can just become, experts on your staff to sell there. I mean, every nation of the world is represented in this country. That's a huge strength. That's tremendous ability to understand the world. We just have a government that's just kind of like got their head in the sand.
Well, Richard, a lot of people equate my liberalism with as a lack of patriotism, as if conservatism might be more patriotic. But, I had a friend who taught in China, and you know, my patriotism is not a blind patriotism. My patriotism is a very considered one. And my friend who taught in China, you know, I said China has 1.2 billion people, four times the number of people that are in the United States. And I said, you know, these kids are working so hard in school. I mean, you're just working, studying, and then and ignore the school test scores, because that's a horribly flawed statistic. But anyway, these kids are working. I said, how come they're not kicking our backsides? And I said, how come for all this work and focus that the Chinese have, the numerical superiority they have, how come they're not kicking our backside? And she goes, Tim, they can't work together like Americans can. She says, it's unbelievable. America's strength is our ability to work together. And I talked with a bank examiner in Russia. And can you imagine being a bank examiner in Russia? I mean, he has his own consulting business that does this. And he said, in America, the strongest thing that you have in America is the social contract, where if you said, Tim, I'll meet you at 5 o'clock tomorrow, we don't need a contract, we don't need to have verifications, whatever. It just means we're going to meet at 5 o'clock and we'll both be there. That's our social contract. It lubricates the industry, the wheels of commerce in this country, and our ability to work together. So, Richard, this is our hope, and this is really what our strength is. And I think you would agree that we've got to take this strength and we've got to work together and get our government to start working with us rather than against us, right?
Well, this is, you know, yeah, oh, absolutely. I wish we had a government that had as much focus on all these issues as, you know, any other country in the world. But our government's just so distracted by, you know, trying to be the world's policeman, and they just haven't quite gotten it yet. It's going to require Americans just to kind of, you know, get their attention, and it happens only in the ballot box. You have to put people in government who kind of get these issues, and you need to ask them about, you know, jobs and how are you going to create actually good jobs and not terrible ones, and tell me your plan. What's your plan? And it has to happen with Hillary, and it has to happen with Bernie, and it has to happen with Jeb, and it has to happen with, you know, Donald Trump. Just what's your damn plan? And tell me what your plan is. I want to know what your plan is, not just a horse race. And I think if Americans did that and they were required, like, what's your plan? I want to hear it. And not just the national politicians, but the local ones, you know, the Kansas board of whoever runs that state, they need to be asked the question. This is a miraculous country. You go to New York, like I said, you go to New York City, and it's like there's so many hardworking people from everywhere in the world. They're all working together. They're respectful of each other. It's just a miraculous place. We don't have all the problems. We do have a lot of problems. We saw it in Baltimore, and it expresses itself constantly. But, I mean, they're just, well, it's just still a miraculous place. It still is. It's phenomenal. It's awesome.
Yeah, and again, we can talk about our patriotism, and we can talk about the greatness of the country. And really, Richard, what you're doing through manufacturing and technology news, what I'm doing about the Tim Danny Show, we just want to keep it great, you know. And so it's a noble effort. Richard, it's manufacturing and technology news. You can find out more about it at manufacturingnews.com. And again, you can hear Richard, and you can see that he's an exceptional person with an exceptional research into his subjects. And I want to thank you for coming again on the Tim Danny Show. I hope we can keep getting you back here.
Great, thanks. My pleasure.
It's been a thrill. And listeners, I want to thank you for joining us, and we'll be back tomorrow.
Texaco's burning up forest to spoil. Bovine growth hormone is milking the public, but that was the week. Kardashians reluctant sequel, that was the week of corporate crime. Whitewash of justice, time after time. Oh, that was the week voting rights were suspended. That was the year civil liberties ended. Oh, that was the week, that was the year. Those were the stories we didn't hear. That was the week. that was the week